Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Juliette Talevi, and tackling your questions on the line this evening are David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Dwayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. But first, insights from Bloomberg. The dollar has held firm on bets in the market for interest rate hikes next year. Here is a quick take from State Street Senior Investment Strategist on why this momentum could continue.
The dollar is considered a safe haven. There is a lot more volatility and concern about inflation, about the next COVID wave in the market. But typically, it's more led by the move in rates. So I think this market expectation of an earlier taper of more rates being priced in, I think in the US, the market is now pricing in 80 basis points over the calendar year 2022. This is essentially what is driving the US dollar higher. And the momentum looks like it could continue, which doesn't bode well actually for certain asset classes such as emerging markets.
Right, well, they are David and Wayne joining us this evening. David, if I might start with you, because you were gad about last week, leaving me and Wayne to our devices. It's sort of an iffy-ish day for the markets. Clear direction. The Rand is under pressure, and I guess that is because, as we've just heard, on this resurgent dollar.
We're in that period of uncertainty, coming out of COVID, coming out of the stimulus into a period where the stimulus is going to be withdrawn, inflation starting to peak up. And so investors very uncertain, not quite sure where to position themselves. And you're getting so many different opinions. I don't want to call it noise because it's unfair, but you know, everybody's got their own view about where this is going. And nobody really knows, but we're trying to fathom it out ourselves. And that's what's happening in the market. It's very volatile, very iffish, very erratic. So it's hard to pin it down. And if you watch the movements on a day-to-day basis, you know, on a minute-to-minute basis, you'll understand what I'm talking about. So it's not easy to read through this, but we will work our way eventually out of this kind of situation. So, it's hard to trade this market at the moment.
Wayne, I mean, should we all be rather petrified with a dollar on a roll and the subsequent, I suppose, sucking of money out of emerging market currencies such as ours?
Look, it's quite normal for this to happen. I mean, we've had a good couple of years where the Rand's been quite strong on the back of very low US interest rates, massive stimulus into the economy by the central banks and the governments, and a commodity up cycle. You know, so now the cycle turns again, and we probably will have a strong dollar because interest rates are going up. The next move in America is up. The effect that interest rate move has on markets worries me way more than a stronger dollar. You know, if inflation is not transitory and stays high, and who knows, but if inflation in America if inflation in America is 4% in the middle of next year, the stock market will actually be very poor because the US will raise interest rates to counter that.
Is that because there's a question asking, could the panel please explain why it is that bonds and equities in the States are selling off simultaneously? Aren't they supposed to be inversely correlated?
No, not at all. Higher interest rates means you lose money on bonds, and higher interest rates on bonds means you lose money on equity because the rating changes.
Okay. Yeah. David?
Yeah. If the rates go up, it's not necessarily bad for the stock market. It depends on the pace at which interest rates rise. You know, the market can still handle, I reckon, interest rates of where we zero now. You know, I'm talking the long rate of 2.5%, even up to 3%, the market can digest that. It's when it starts to go higher than that, and it starts to eat into profits, especially, you know, when Wayne speaks about inflation. If it becomes embedded in the mindset of wage earners or salary earners that rates are going up, then they start to demand more, spend more, and you get that whole inflation cycle. But if these are moderate increases, the market can still digest it and handle it. So it all depends on the pace at which those rates go up. And Wayne is correct. You know, we've got to see where inflation goes. And nobody knows.
And, you know, if inflation's 2-2.5% in the middle of next year, then there's no tremendous danger to the markets. And inflation, all of these bottlenecks, the chip shortages, that'll work its way out of the system. That is truly transitory. If oil goes to 90 or 100, that ain't transitory. But the biggest risk is actually wages. Or will we see US wage inflation? Because there's more jobs than people.
I have to say, though, is that such a bad thing? You have, you know, better societies, stronger economies.
It's bad for the stock market. I mean, don't for a moment mix up the stock market with what's happening currently. Stock market looks ahead.
Okay.
So if rates go up, the market's going down.
But by the same token, if you've got people earning more and therefore able to spend more, surely consumer-faced companies should do quite well.
No, because the ratings are so high. You know, the price of a share is made up of two things, the earnings and the rating. And at the moment, the rating is at all-time record highs because interest rates are at virtually all-time record lows. Okay. So even if rating earnings pick up, it's not enough to compensate for the rating falling.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Got you. Okay.
Yeah, it's complicated. And we're trying to work our way through this at the moment. You know, people are trying to understand where this is going, where it's going to end, and how it's playing out. And that's why you're getting the severe volatility. But and we are seeing spending. You know, people are earning money. They're spending their savings. And of course, you know, they're earning more. They're going back to work. And of course, you know, if you've got a shortage of supply, whether it's bottlenecks or not, we don't know whether those bottlenecks will work their way or this is a genuinely strong demand against which you can't find the supply. That's the danger. And that's the traditional legacy type inflation or worrying inflation.
Yeah.
You know, that's demand driven inflation. At the moment, there's a supply shortage, you know, and that's why we're getting prices up. So it's a very complicated type issue, and you've got these different camps, the transitory camp and the permanent camp, you know, fighting it out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me move on to other questions, specifically on stocks. And there's one on US group PayPal. It says, the only disappointing stock in my US portfolio is PayPal. Can the panel provide some insight into the loss of performance of this particular share? Who wants to have a crack at that?
Look, I mean, I can give a general comment. You saw today with ARM or African Rainbow, everything nowadays is payment systems. Everything's fintech and payment system. All the cell phone companies are getting into payment systems. There's new payment systems being listed in India. I mean, everything. You know, NASPAS is massively into payment systems. All the big Chinese tech companies are into payment systems. So there's serious competition to PayPal.
Okay.
I like PayPal, and I think they'll find a way back, the same as Visa and MasterCard. But Wayne's right. You know, there's a lot of challenges. And this is also a challenge to traditional banks, you know, who've always dominated that area. Suddenly you're finding cell phone companies and everybody having platforms which, you know, they make fees. I mean, eventually it does go through the bank, you know, but these companies are chipping away at their what was their traditional domain. And
remember when Shapiro went shopping in New York and you just walk into the store and you take what you want to and walk out, they recognize who you are, what your cell phone is, they build the account. There's no cashier. That's only at shops that Shapiro.
That's Amazon.
Yes, it's not your local Mr. Price, although it could be headed that way. Actually, just a question. So PayPal's under assault from rampant competition. David, you think they're going to come back? Would you hang on to it if it were in your portfolio?
Okay. I'm including the banks as well. They'll meet the challenge. That's what I mean. They've got the force to meet the challenge and we'll come back at them. But it's going to be competitive and it's going to eat into their margins. But I think that they're strong enough to survive.
Okay. Then coming back to the local market, there's a question on Life Healthcare. The viewer says, solid update from Life Healthcare recently, double-digit revenue uptick, some cash-generating disposal activity, even a dividend to boot. Is it possible that the backlog of elective surgeries will sustain this growth and profitability trajectory? A faint heart never won. Wayne, do you think there is a sufficient backlog to buoy these companies?
Probably the backlogs. I mean, I've spoken to a few people in the medical industry, and you know, the backlog, you seem to be over the peak now. So all the hospital companies showed fantastic results. You're measuring off a low base and you've got this pent up demand, and they're all back to pre-COVID levels. But next year will be a more normal year, if you like to put it that way. I mean, the fourth wave is coming. It'll probably peak in the middle of January. There'll probably be as many daily infections as what we had in the second and third wave, but there will be far fewer seriously ill people, because roughly speaking, 50-55% of the population has had some form of vaccination, whether it's only one. But yeah, and people over 60, it's about almost 70% are fully vaccinated. So there won't be such a big rush to the hospitals in this fourth wave. Mm. So this is a good year, and I like the hospital groups, but next year growth will be normal because the pent-up elective surgery is probably over its peak.
And David, if growth is normal, as Wayne's suggests, and that is the most likely case, do the share prices where they are now warrant normal growth, or are they still undervalued in that context?
Not excessively undervalued. I think they're starting to normalize. You've now got to look at what the companies do. You know, Netcare is basically a South African company. Life Healthcare's got the diagnostic business,
yes,
which is
that's
very
good business.
Very, very good business. And you know, if you've got Alzheimer's, or you want to get the Alzheimer's drug, you've got to go and have your head scan and various things, which Life Healthcare does. I say that because I'm getting to that age, you know. And then Mediclinic's got Switzerland, and it's got the UAE, you know, got those hospitals. So they're different dynamics, but I think they're okay. You know, they're reasonable businesses now. But I think, as Wayne says, I think that that gap has been covered now.
Yeah. Okay. Then there's one stock which came out with a cautionary today, or an updated cautionary, which was AVI. And the question is, what happens to AVI if the Mondelez buyout fails? And I kind of wondered, firstly, why AVI shares came off
to the extent
they did. Is it because people were expecting Mondelez to buy out all of AVI, just not just the Snackworks division? Or what's the disappointment here? Because they're still in talks. Wayne?
Yeah, look, I'm not sure why the share price fell. That didn't make much sense to me. Look, you look at AVI, they got Snackworks, fantastic business. Then they got the shoes, and then they got the fish. Mm. Now, shoes and fish are heavily cyclical. These are properly cyclical businesses. And to be honest, if the snack business is sold, and we assume it's going to be sold at a big premium, because, you know, for the third time, this is a fantastic business. You know, I don't think you want to own AVI without the Snackworks.
Mm-mm.
I really
you don't.
Don't
want to own fish, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to
fish. It's a terrible business.
It's Irwin and Johnson. No, you don't want that. And also, who wants, what's it?
Jimmy Choo.
Jimmy, no, I wish they were Jimmy.
We all do want a bit of Jimmy Choo. It's not Jimmy Choo, it's Spitz.
Is it not? Oh, I thought it was. Shows how much I know about shoes.
It's Kurt Geiger and Green Cross. I don't know, have they still got Green Cross, or did they sell it?
Green Cross gave them troubles a few years back. They weren't fashionable.
There's nothing remains. And they'll probably sell those off to private equity.
Beata Manthi, who's a global equity strategist at Citi, reckons that buying the dip is still a potent force in the markets.
We have this framework in place that is called bear market checklist, which is one of the most popular frameworks we've done, and we always get asked about the updates every time that the market goes down. And it is a compilation of all the different factors in the market and in the economy. There are 18 factors, and all that they had in common in the past is that at the times of the market peaks, they've been sending this red warning signs that the end is imminent. Right now, there are only 7.5 out of 18 factors flashing this red warning signals. So basically, what our bear market checklist is telling you is to buy into the next dip.
David Wayne, do you agree with her?
I haven't got a spreadsheet. You know, I don't know how she works out 7.5 out of how many
18 factors.
I've never operated that way. You know, you've always looked at a business and come up with some opinion of where you think it's worth or what you think the intrinsic value is worth, and you know, you continue to buy. So do you buy on the dip? What she's alluding to, if there's a big fall in the market, do you just run away, or do you feel that this is another buying opportunity? I'm still bullish on the market, but I don't have any spreadsheet to judge. You know, with me, it's much more judgmental. It's more instinct than relying on any of those statistics or views.
Mm. Yeah, with me, it's more like a dartboard, really, than anything else.
Ask Wayne.
Wayne, do you have a spreadsheet?
I've got a couple of spreadsheets, yeah. But if the market falls 40%, you close your eyes and you buy.
Okay. Mm.
So if that's buying the dips, then I'm in. But in a rising interest rate environment, buying the dips after it's fallen 2, 3, 4% might not be a winning strategy. It's clearly a winning strategy in a falling interest rate environment, but it might not be in a rising interest rate environment.
I know we were talking about AVI, but I feel like I haven't really closed off that conversation earlier. And the question the viewer sent us was, what happens if the Mondelez bid fails? And we didn't really answer that, because in fact the shares came down today. But what we did say was, if Mondelez buys the Snackworks business of AVI, there's nothing really that you would necessarily want to own. But if the Mondelez bid, if they walk away, will AVI sort of maybe fall a percent or two? Do you think it'll be catastrophic for the share price? I don't get that impression that it would be.
There's been a lot of volatility. If you look at the chart, I don't know if you can put it up on the screen in that, or the recent, you know, it's been up and down and up and down. And I think there was a big gain. And I think all it's doing is just correcting from that in a very, very high move. But I would have thought that if this is a serious bid, and as Wayne says, you're going to pay a big premium, they would actually maintain the price.
Mm.
You know, if they sell Mondelez, I mean, if they sell Snackworks, there is nothing left. Nobody wants Irwin and Johnson. Nobody wants Kurt Geiger. So, or the other brands, I think they've got various perfume brands. And they, you know, I think that would also be sold off to private equity or somewhere else. So I think the value lies in Snackworks.
Yeah. Okay. But not takeovers, not always the best thing for companies. Certainly I had a friend who worked for a company taken over by Mondelez, and it wasn't a great outcome for them. Moving on, there's a question on Sibanye-Stillwater asking whether the panel can please give me their view on the share price for the next 12 months. Wayne, Sibanye sort of seems, just stuck, you know, and having come off its highs of earlier this year, they're now playing hardball with the unions over talks as far as the gold aspect of the business is concerned. Do you think they're going to bumble along, or can you see anything igniting the share?
I mean, Sibanye is tied to the PGMs and especially palladium. That is Sibanye. The other stuff is so small, it almost doesn't matter. Now, we all know where they got their South African assets from. They got them from either companies that have gone bankrupt 5 times or companies that wanted to sell those assets because they were terrible assets. But the Stillwater side is actually a very, very good asset. But when you put it all together, it's probably the most marginal of all the PGMs. So to answer the question, I don't see great upside in the next 12 months. I also don't see too much more downside. I think the PGMs are probably quite close to the bottom, but I'm very bullish on PGMs longer term. So being the most geared player, if I'm right, you could do very well out of Sibanye-Stillwater on a 5-year view.
Yeah. And David, it's not just PGMs that you would, you know, they are exploring all these battery metals, and hopefully, you know, they do canny deals that they don't overpay for anything. And they've already done a couple of deals. But if that aspect of the commodities sector continues to do well, they should profit from us.
They should. Obviously, Neil Froneman's got a longer-term strategy in mind. They've actually underperformed the market quite dramatically. They've been down about 15%. The market's up, call it 15 to 20%. So they've been one of the big underperformers. And that's surprising because, you know, you've got a rand now at, what, 15.90. Platinum prices have been holding. They haven't really fallen in the eve. Palladium's come down. But I'm quite surprised at the reaction, you know, in the market that it's been as weak as it has. Mm. So I probably agree with Wayne. I think that you're getting to the bottom of that sell-off, you know, probably from now on it'll either be steady and start picking up.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's a question on a company called Celsius in the US. Have either of you heard of this? Celsius spelt, and I think the viewer's got it right, C-E-L-C-I-U-S. He asks, should I sell my Coca-Cola stocks for Celsius, which have been growing year on year for the past 5 years at a rate of more than 110%?
Celsius?
Can't help you there.
If I knew.
You want to sell your Coca-Cola? Coca-Cola's looking okay. They're coming back. PepsiCo, Coca-Cola coming back as people adjust their tastes and they come out with new products. They now sell more water. You know, they sell water. Coke is still a very, very big brand. You know, even with this view against sugar. I mean, they've really turned it around. By turning it around, I mean restructuring it. That it's not my favorite company, but I mean they're doing better than I thought they would.
Okay.
Yeah, especially with the anti-sugar, with this whole anti-sugar view, they're doing okay, and big sales outside of in emerging markets. Yeah.
Okay, so you wouldn't sell your Coca-Cola, Celsius, sorry, spelt with the S, actually. It's founded or headquartered in Boca Raton in Florida, home of the retiree. But I still don't actually know what it does. But it's a beverage company. Mm. It's a beverage company.
Okay.
People's Choice, Funk Food, OYJ. Sorry, apologies to the viewer for our rampant wholesale ignorance. but maybe don't sell your Coca-Cola.
We know Monster Beverage because that was started by two South Africans or ex-South Africans. You know, that we know, but I'm not sure of Celsius.
Okay. Then there was a question that I didn't get to last night, a couple of questions, so I said I would. Can the panel evaluate the long-term insurance sector, in particular Sanlam, Momentum, Liberty, and Discovery, which I suppose really are the whole.
It is the long-term sector.
Excluding Old Mutual. Sanlam's gone nowhere in 5 years. What's the outlook for the sector? Wayne, what do you think? Do you think they've got a chance of going somewhere?
Look, it's not exciting, unfortunately. They are critically dependent on what happens in the South African economy. And the economy, you know, unless we get true structural reforms coming at a pace, you know, it's going to grow by 1.5%, 2% for the next 5 years, if nothing goes terribly wrong and if Eskom doesn't collapse in a heap, et cetera, et cetera. So you can't get terribly excited about the companies. However, these are still good, solid companies. You know, they're all at big discounts to their so-called embedded value. Just call it net asset value for want of a better word. And that does unlock over time. And they're good, solid dividend payers, but in other words, if you're a conservative investor and you're a bit worried about the level of your savings and you don't want to take too much risk, these are not bad companies. Yeah. Maybe hold off buying a little bit because they all seem to be experiencing more deaths than what they budgeted for and they're all going to have to up their provisions. But these are good, solid companies. But unfortunately, can't get excited about it. Mm.
David, having said that, and absolutely take into account what Wayne says, there are a few within the baskets, like Sanlam, which has Saham, which is sort of North African operations. Mm-hmm. They've got, and Discovery has got the bank. Discovery's got, you know, it's kind of worldwide vitality penetration, and it's got its Ping An association. So there are some that aren't wholly localized. Would you buy either a Sanlam or a Discovery, or still not?
No.
Okay.
For the reason that Wayne has identified, we need strong underlying growth. You need people to increase their savings and wealth, you know, that they reinvest or put into saving products or take out They take out insurance products. You know, no one wants to buy insurance. You're banged on the head and forced to buy it, you know, mainly because for protection, you know. So when you're short of money, it's the first thing that you give up, you know, if you're tight. So it's not, you know, the exciting period was in the 60s and 70s and 80s when this economy was growing and people were getting wealthier. It's very difficult. And now today you've got, as we were talking about earlier, you're getting a whole lot of new products coming through, which are, you know, in the fintech space. And people want to take control of their own, you know, their own financial services. So I find it a very difficult area.
Okay.
You know, it's very hard, yeah.
Okay, so neither of you are particularly enthusiastic about the sector or any of the companies there. I shall move on to your stock picks now. Wayne, you're going for Mr. Price. Why?
Yeah, look, the share price hasn't gone that way. It hasn't gone, you know, anywhere for a little while now. The price earnings ratio is about 15, 16. It looks reasonable. The earnings were actually quite good, quite nice recovery. And this serves South Africa. I mean, it's the right product range at the right price into the market. Why not?
Okay. David, how about you? You indicated at the, well, before we went on air, that the dollar you'd be buying.
It's streaming ahead. You know, their exports today knocked the market out. In fact, very, very strong exports, which are leading economists to believe that they're going to grow. The U.S. economy is going to grow at 5% in the fourth quarter, which is way above expectation. So that economy is a lot stronger than everybody thinks it is. And, you know, together with worries about inflation, and perhaps I don't think they're going to be an immediate interest rate rises. I think the perception is that there will be rate rises sooner than later. So I think you're going to get more money flowing into the dollar. And, you know, that's going to be to our disadvantage. But for the meantime, I think there is a trading opportunity in more so, you know, certainly for the next 3, 4, 5 months.
Okay. David, Wayne, we shall leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. As always, nice to see you both. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments. And we'll be back tomorrow night. Same time, same place. Have a good evening.